Public land, it's our resource and our right as Americans. President Theodore Roosevelt may have said it best. We have fallen heirs to the most glorious heritage a people ever received, and each one must do his part if we wish to show that the nation is worthy of its good fortune. Today, we celebrate our public lands and maybe help better understand them. Also, a look at the challenges those places face.
Our sponsor, Tito's Handmade Vodka, is America's original craft vodka, distilled from corn and naturally gluten-free. Over 25 years ago, the first batch of Tito's was made in the heart of Austin, Texas. And tomorrow's batch will be too. Tito's tastes just as good with tap water as it does with your favorite mixer. Tito's makes the good stuff for the good times, too. You can find recipes, videos, and more at Tito'sVodka.com. True adventures are crafted together. And Tito's Handmade Vodka is also pledging to protect where we play by working with nonprofits to protect and enhance our national parks for the present and future generations to come. To learn more, visit Tito'sEnvironmental.com.
I'm Bill Shirk. I fish, I hunt, I camp, and I tell stories. Welcome to the Minnesota Bound Podcast, the stories behind the stories. Welcome to today's episode. You know, later this week, a bunch of people from all sorts of different organizations are going to gather at the Minnesota State Capitol to celebrate and highlight the importance of public land. And in Minnesota, I guess you can add to that our public waters. The announcement of the big event kind of got me thinking, what do we all really know about public land? So I decided to go to the source. Joining me today, Lucas Leaf, the head of sportsmen for the Boundary Waters, and Aaron Habeisen from Backcountry Hunters and Anglers. Good morning, guys. Lucas, maybe we start with you. What exactly is public land?
Well, public land, Bill, is a shared resource that we all own. It's accessible to everybody in the United States. And, you know, here in Minnesota, state, county, and federal, we're close to 25% of the state is public land. And that's a resource for everybody to hike, bike, fish, hunt, birdwatch, camp, or anything in between. And that's, you know, literally what we're focusing on for Public Lands Day as well.
Wildlife management areas, state parks, national forests. We've got one national park. Even organizations like Pheasants Forever, they're now over 212,000 acres purchased, rehabbed, and open to the public. Aaron, what sorts of other places do we consider public lands here in Minnesota?
I mean, honestly, anything from state parks to community baseball fields, public pools, obviously all of our public waters that then in the winter when it freezes up becomes public land. I think that's one thing that gets overlooked in Minnesota a lot is all of those public waters and boat ramps, as well as, you know, some of those smaller public hunting spaces like an SNA, in contrast to a WMA, some of those scientific natural areas.
I almost think that here in Minnesota, public lands feels a little bit different than maybe the West, right? Because out West, you've got these massive chunks of BLM, Bureau of Land Management lands that will go for miles and miles and miles, where we don't necessarily always have that here. It's in smaller spaces, but probably in higher numbers. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think in some of those Western states that you're referencing, you can have as much as 40, 50, 60% of the entire land mass is public. Whereas Lucas said, you know, about 25 or so is the case here in Minnesota. But you add in those waters and that increases, certainly. You're right. It is smaller tracts, but I think that also allows it to be more accessible to folks in more places. I live down in the southeastern part of the state, and we've got, you know, Memorial Hardwood Forests, you know, smaller chunks, but certainly just as wild as anywhere I've been out west.
It's funny. We just shot a piece down there not too long ago talking about dispersed camping, which is the ability in our state to find those state forests and camp kind of away from the crowds. And we were down in the Memorial Hardwood Forest, and there, it's almost difficult at times because there are so many different little chunks. There's a piece here, and then you cross over here, and you, right? But maps are a huge resource for that sort of thing, too. We'll talk more about that in just a little bit. But first, I want to get to the event coming up this week. Lucas, what's the idea? What's the point of going to the state capitol?
It's really to show a unified front on something that's so important to all of us, which is our shared public lands, waters, and outdoor traditions. You know, we have a number of great speakers from DNR Commissioner Sarah Strauman, Senator Herr, Senator Pratt, Pheasants. You mentioned Pheasants Forever, their president and CEO, Marilyn Vetter speaking, and also the Minnesota BHA board chair, Eli Mansfield. So they're all going to have, you know, varying perspectives on, you know, public land successes and you know, how we've, you know, done such a great job of managing and creating, you know, opportunities here in Minnesota. So it's a really cool opportunity for folks to come down and really celebrate something that is so important to all of us and that we all use on a daily basis. So yeah, and as you mentioned, there are a lot of groups involved, 12 organizations at this point.
For a random person who might be listening today who says, well, okay, they're doing it, I get it, why should I go? How do you respond to that?
I say yeah, come I down take- and you go ahead, Aaron.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, something that I tell people when we're, you know, meeting up with them at an event or a trade show is the policy pieces aren't as sexy, let's just say it, as some of the stewardship opportunities. Going out and cleaning up a fence line and removing old barbed wire fence, or cleaning up a boat ramp, or pulling tires out of the creek is certainly a piece of the work that needs to be done. Those, the boots on the ground projects, people getting their hands dirty. But a different way that people have to get involved is that policy piece and make your voice heard, because if you don't go and contact your legislators, meet with them in person, show that, show force in numbers, that's when these things can get taken away. And so this is our opportunity to collectively, you know, go and do that. And we can do it as organizations, but it only helps our voice and helps, you know, represent the people if their legislators are hearing from them. I can go and contact a legislator that's based out of the Twin Cities, being from the Southeast, but if I'm not their constituent, then my voice doesn't matter as much to that person. Whereas if you show up to contact your legislators, have a meeting with them, and they know that you're someone that is in their district and that these issues matter to a person who is in their district, it holds a lot more weight.
In some ways, maybe people take some of this stuff for granted. We all do at times, face it, right? Like a place like the Boundary Waters, we all expect it to just be there. But we don't always think it takes some work for it to be protected and to last, right? I'll use the proposed mine projects as an example. You have to work. You have to have a voice to say, no, this mine cannot happen. Otherwise, the policy just kind of follows the path through government, and then one day things happen.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, speaking of public lands and waters, the Boundary Waters is nearly 1.1 million acres of our public lands and waters too, right? So, and back to what Aaron said too, I mean, this isn't just a rally day either. This is a day where we're collectively coming together during the day as well to meet with legislators, to introduce some of the folks coming to the rally to legislators, and also the state office buildings and the Capitol itself. And we're also going to be, you know, capping it off with an event at Lake Monster Brewing after, where we're all going to come together and chat about some of those policy issues that we can't necessarily cover during the rally itself, just because we are so many groups coming together. And, you know, we're really using that rally as a celebratory piece of the day.
This is a podcast, so we can stereotype, but those alcohol or beer infused sort of roundtable moments tend to be really awesome. People loosen up, They speak freely, and there are a lot of great ideas and great concerns that are born out of those little get-togethers.
Absolutely. I've always said the best work gets done after hours.
Plus, I mean, see it every year at the DNR roundtable. The mm-hmm. seminars and the presentations are great, but it's that hallway conversation that, you know, really kind of moves that needle.
Right. And that's sort of after the fact, as people loosen up a little bit and just show their passion a little mm-hmm. bit. All right. We need to take just a quick break to thank a couple of sponsors. But when we come back, I'm going to challenge you guys a little bit. I want you to each think about your single favorite piece of public land here in the state. And I want to share a story from each of those spots. Does that sound fair?
Yes. That sounds great.
Awesome. Lucas Leaf and Aaron Habeisen are my guests today. I'm Bill Schrick, the man about the woods, and you are listening to the Minnesota Bound podcast, the stories behind the stories. And we have so many sponsors that help us get to you each week. Up first, I want to thank our friends at Connecticut Water. No doubt it's been that sort of winter, like record weird. No snow until late. Very little cold. Not a lot of time on the ice or the ski slopes. You know, this year I've been busy coaching youth hockey, and it's sort of funny, but the Shirk boys, they never leave the house without filling their water bottles, and it's always Connecticut Water. We have Connecticut's whole home water system at both the house and also at the cabin. We also install Connecticut's K5 drinking water system. And let me tell you, those things make a big difference. It's crazy to think that a water system could matter, but it does. The Connecticut installations were quick and easy. No more stinky, foul well water. We now have Connecticut soft water and the K5 drinking water. No more bottled water, just great water right out of the K5 tap. Our laundry no longer smells funky, and Connecticut water cleaned up the showers and the dishes too. The world's most efficient worry-free water system. Visit Connecticut.com to find a dealer near you and join the Connecticut family. Also, we want to give a shout out to Lakes Gas. Hey there, Bill Shirk, the man about the woods. Propane, it's clean, efficient fuel produced right here in the United States. Schedule your propane service with a friend. Lakes Gas, a family-owned provider serving the upper Midwest for more than 60 years. 54 convenient locations in Minnesota and Wisconsin. Now with offices in North Dakota and South Dakota too. Lakes Gas employees live in the communities they serve, so you can expect personalized service from professionals. Oh, and the Lakes Gas offers competitive pricing without all the extras that tend to drive up fuel prices. Safe, dependable service. Lakes Gas, the right choice for your home, business, or farm. Visit lakesgas.com and join the family. Lucas Leaf and Aaron Habeisen join me for today's discussion on public lands. You know, President Theodore Roosevelt, it's funny, side note, everyone always calls him Teddy Roosevelt. And the afterthought is he never liked being called Teddy. It was just kind of in passing. So you should always call him Theodore Roosevelt. But he was one of the first leaders in this country to really focus on public land, the heritage of it, and the protection. And he kind of started the national parks. We have one here in Minnesota, Voyageurs National Park, of which we just shot a story up there last fall, a little camping and fishing piece. So watch for that in Minnesota Bound. But guys, you both, maybe more so than most folks, have an opportunity to take advantage of public lands here in Minnesota. Aaron, let's start with you. You said you're from the southeastern part of the state, so down in the Driftless region, the bluffs and the trout streams. Where is your spot? If you want to get away, what is that one magic place for you?
Yeah, it's funny you should say that. I grew up in East Central Minnesota, and for me, the wild places were actually up in the Iron Range. our cabins up between Hibbing and Grand Rapids. But once I moved down to the southeast and I worked for the Red Wing Shoe Company for a few years and really got to know this area, the Driftless, the Blufflands. And for me, it was out on the Mississippi River. It's this, you know, I almost take it for granted that we've got this incredible fishery, this flyway for waterfowl, this real gateway to the West that, you know, trickles all the way down to Gulf of Mexico. And it's this crazy empowering system that literally I can look out my front window and see. And some of the backwater channels on that Mississippi are where I was introduced to some BHA members. And the first time I went duck hunting, they took me out in their boat with their dogs and their decoys and, you know, never accepted a dime. And it was really kind of this step into the outdoors that I grew up a deer hunter. So I didn't have anybody really to connect with in waterfowl. And so for the last 6 years, I've been just enamored with different flights of different birds, recipes of different birds, what they look like in full plumage and not, and what's in the area different times of the year. And yeah, really that's been my newest step, I guess I would say, into public lands, is those kind of Mississippi back channels.
Well, and that's the thing. When people think about rivers, right, it's moving water with a bank over here and on the opposite side, another bank. But the Mississippi down there is a never-ending maze.
Yeah, it's real easy to get lost. and it's always changing. The river's changing. The vegetation around it is changing. And yeah, if you're not following that map, it's really easy to get twisted around. But that's part of the mystery and the appeal of it. It's never something that can be too stagnant.
All right, you mentioned meeting BHA members. BHA, what is that? Talk about it a little bit.
So Backcountry Hunters and Anglers is a conservation organization. We've got about 30,000 members nationwide. And I tell people, you know, similar to other kind of legacy conservation organizations that you might have heard of, but the difference is BHA isn't focused on a specific species like ducks or deer or turkeys, but instead focusing on public land and water and access to those places. So for me, that's kind of twofold. There's the advocacy piece, which we talked about, you know, going to public lands day, having meetings with legislators, discussing what bills we would like to see proposed or supported or opposed, and working with those legislators to help pass, you know, legislation in our favor for those lands, waters, and wildlife. But the other piece is that stewardship piece. So going out and putting up duck houses or fixing up blinds on public land, going and removing those tires, putting up monofilament collection tubes at boat ramps so people can get rid of that old fishing line. These are just some of the projects, you know, removing old fence line from WMAs. It's that boots on the ground work that really kind of has given BHA a space to do its best work. About 70% of our membership is under 45. So it's a young, energetic, active group who's willing to go out and get their hands dirty. And that's something that's really been a way that we've engaged our audience to, you know, empower people.
Lucas, what about you? You get around, so to speak. Favorite spot, public land. I have a feeling I know what your answer is, but let's see.
Yeah, I mean, like I should say Boundary Waters, right? And I think for me that's a given. You know, spring fishing opener in the Boundary Waters is top tier for me. But I think since we're on the subject, you know, mention some other places. I mean, I grew up going to a fish house that my, you know, dad and his friends owned on Mille Lacs. But also, you know, my dad and his family being from Malacca, we spent a lot of time on the Rum River, specifically in the fall for smallmouth. And I just have such great memories of, you know, even in low water, dragging an Alumacraft through, you know, over the rocks to get to some great spots on the Rum and starting in Malacca. And and specifically with my dad. And we've had some really, really fun times. And, you know, I back to that fish house, you know, I still personally own it, you know, though we didn't have a great hard water season up there this year. It's been going out on the ice for 30 years and I've just have so many great memories and the kids have seen it now, both my girls that are, my twins that are four. So we're looking to keep that in the family here and build some more memories for them too.
So Sportsmen for the Boundary Waters, the organization you lead, what is that all about?
I mean, we were really born, in the midst of the copper nickel mining controversy. And, throughout the years we've expanded into other areas. Really, we work with BHA on a lot of things, DNR at the federal level with the Forest Service. So though copper nickel mining is still a top tier issue for us, we're involved with, you know, the elk herd, management legislation right now, chronic wasting disease. We're working with the DNR on a big WMA project this fall. So we do have our hands in a lot of stuff and we're looking forward to the future. And, you know, our whole goal is really maintaining, you know, the integrity of the Boundary Waters, its fisheries, you know, wildlife and habitat for future generations. And that involves working in surrounding areas and regions as well.
And your organization, widely a younger membership as well.
I would say so. I think it varies too, right? I mean, there's a lot of folks in that area who have a big stake in maintaining, you know, the pristineness of the Boundary Waters as well. So it really varies, honestly. But, you know, the folks that are really active, I think, like we'll see at this rally, are going to be a bit younger as well and kind of run along the same lines as demographics as BHA too.
Public land shapes us, right? As a kid, the Boundary Waters trips just changed me personally. Maybe that's somewhat of a reflection of what I do now for work, but those lands impact all of us. But it's not always all rosy either. Like public lands aren't a given. There are challenges, I'll even call them threats. Like, talk about that part of the equation a little bit, Lucas.
I mean, I can speak, you know, directly to the Boundary Waters, right? I mean, one of the biggest issues we've been working on is the Twin Metals copper nickel mining project and its potential for polluting a large portion of the Rainy River watershed, which houses the Boundary Waters. So it really is a case of the wrong type of mine in the wrong place, right? You know, we always make sure to preach that, you know, this isn't an anti-mining, you know, movement for us. This is specific to this type of mine in this type of place. So we're strong advocates for iron ore and taconite and maintaining that backbone of the Iron Range. But it just simply comes down to a type of mining that hasn't proven itself to be capable of being placed in such a water-rich environment. And, you know, especially given climate change factors and you know, the way that water moves north throughout the Rainy River watershed, it could be detrimental to, especially to the fisheries themselves and some of the sensitive populations of fish that are in the Boundary Waters.
It's watchdog work.
Yeah, really,
right?
It is.
It's keeping an eye, checks and balances, which is something that's built into our government. And we should be allowed to do the same. Keep an eye on things. Aaron, what about for you guys, for BHA? Like, what are the concerns or priorities?
Yeah, it's funny that you should say public lands kind of shaped us, because I actually came at it from kind of the opposite direction. I'd really never been exposed to public lands a whole lot until going out west. And it was on an antelope hunt in the mid-2010s, 2015 or so. And I was standing on public land. We were trying to get on another chunk of public land that there was a roadway that, according to Onyx Maps, said was public, and there was a gate across it. The private landowner had gated that road, that public road, essentially locking that public land piece out. And I came back from that Western trip with a really bad taste in my mouth about public lands, and I was like, man, am I going to do this again? This is hard. And how do we expect to have any access to some of these places if everybody's just going to lock us out? And I'm not going to go climb this fence and end up with a rifle in my face. And, you know, 6 months later, found out that there was an organization that was advocating to open some of these places up. And so right now, I mean, that's one of the biggest issues nationally is this corner crossing idea that if you imagine a checkerboard, and the red space is our private land and the black space is our public land, that you should be able to cross at one of those corners from black spot to black spot, and never be tried of trespassing. So that would be a big national one. And then we see some, I'll call them kind of Trojan horse type issues that would lock us out of public land here in Minnesota. Again, we have really great access, especially to our waterways in Minnesota. But there are threats. So for example, Lucas mentioned chronic wasting disease. A couple of years ago, we saw where a captive cervid farmer had dumped carcasses that were CWD positive on public lands in his area. And that land ended up being quarantined and locked out. It was 12 acres of public land that ended up being shut down to public access. And BHA really hadn't engaged on the CWD issue, but once it became a public access issue, that's really when we kind of stepped into the ring on it. We've seen the same thing on the aquatic side. On the water side, you'll have a public lake that a lake or lakeshore association or group of homeowners on that lake will say, well, we're trying to, and they're trying to do the right thing, right? It's in good faith. Well, we're trying to keep the aquatic invasives from coming into this lake. Therefore, we're going to essentially privatize this lake. And so under the guise of, you know, we're doing this in favor of keeping the aquatic invasives out for the quality of the water and the fishery, but at the detriment of public access. So it's kind of these, we'll call them sneaky ways of locking out access. And those are the things that we really want to have the conversations about and say, hey, look, how can we keep the access open, but still maintain that quality fishery or habitat for the wildlife and the people that live in the area?
And I would argue that little pieces over time add up to big change, right? That's part of this as well.
Absolutely.
All right. We need to thank a couple more sponsors, but after the break, I want you both to talk a little bit about how people can get involved and actually make a difference. Because for me personally, so much of this is, well, does one vote matter? Does one person really make change? And I want you guys to speak to that, if that is something you can do.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely.
Okay. That's awesome. I'm Bill Shirk, the man about the woods. Lucas Leaf and Aaron Habeisen are my guests today, and we are talking public lands. We have a lot of great sponsors who continue to support the Minnesota Bound podcast, and we are so appreciative of all of them. A thank you to Your Boat Club.
Got the winter blues? Start planning your summer. Plan on fun and get out in the water with Your Boat Club. Your Boat Club offers boat club memberships and daily rentals with access to over 40 bodies of water and over 400 brand new boats to enjoy. Whether you want to cruise on a pontoon, create waves in a speedboat, or reel in a big one on a fishing boat, Your Boat Club has got you covered. Unlimited boating memberships are available now, starting at just $1.99 a month after a one-time initiation. Life is better on the water. Find out more today at yourboatclub.com.
We also want to thank our longtime partners at Star Bank.
Hi, everybody. Ron Shera here again with another nifty story, this one about my favorite bank, the story of Star Bank. There's 10 of them in Minnesota, but here's where the plot thickens. A Star Bank is more than money. A Star Bank cares about its customers, cares about the community, whether it's town parades or the kids' baseball team. Why? Because Star Banks are locally owned. They treat you right. Quite a tale, wouldn't you say? How do I know? Because Star Bank is also our bank at Ron Shera Productions. Just another story with a happy ending. Star Bank, the bank that cares. Member FDIC. To learn more online, go to star.bank.
All right, so today we are talking public lands. On Friday of this week at the Minnesota State Capitol, big get together to celebrate and just acknowledge public lands and their importance. We've talked a little bit about a few of the challenges or threats to our public lands that are out there. But it goes back to what I said before the break. I think for so many people, things like the boundary waters or our state forests, they're just automatically there. And people think, well, I don't need to be involved. I don't have a voice. Lucas, can you speak to that a little bit? That sort of helpless feeling, is that fair, unfair? Should people be involved? Is there somebody else that will do the work? Like, what's your take on that?
I mean, it really just involves taking that first step, right? You mentioned, you know, does one vote matter? Does one voice matter? And it absolutely does. You know, there's so many ways to get involved. First and foremost, I would say, join an organization that you're passionate about. You know, check out Backcountry Hunters and Anglers, visit our website at, you know, sportsmanbwca.org, see what those organizations are involved in. And if it's something you're passionate about, join. You will be informed, incredibly well on how to get involved with those issues. It's also incredibly important and really easy to contact your local legislator, you know, whomever's district you are in, you know, especially in Minnesota, your state representative or senator, they are eagerly awaiting you to contact them and tell you what's important to you. You know, most of the folks that we contact, you know, for meetings, they want a constituent in those meetings because they want to know what their folks are thinking and what they care about. So you have that power immediately to let your legislators know what you care about. I'd say those are the two biggest things, and get out to events like Public Lands Day, meet folks, chat, you know, find like-minded people. The conservation world is a lot smaller and tighter than folks might think, and you'll meet people quick and make a lot of great connections.
I'm chuckling a little bit. My email is buzzing as you talk, and it is a representative from one of our U.S. senators' offices. We've been having a hard time with access to national forests and have been told that we can never again document any sort of story in the boundary waters, that we are not allowed to ever be there. So that's obviously a topic that's a pretty high priority. And to your point, Lucas, we are trying to talk to those people who represent. We want to be the constituents. We want to be the voice. Aaron, what about you? What's your take on people getting involved?
Yeah, absolutely. We've seen it to where, you know, public hearings will be happening and they'll be streamed online. And I've personally watched testimony be emailed in. That legislator glanced down at their computer in the process of giving their own testimony and do an absolute 180 because they had a vote come in during the time that they were casting those votes, and they did a total 180 flip on the way that they were expected to vote because of a single email coming in. And for people who haven't done it before, contacting your legislator about a certain issue, they're just people, right? Like we kind of probably put our legislators and our duly elected up on a pedestal because they hold public office. But at the end of the day, they're just people. And most of the time you're going to get an office aide or a secretary, you know, who answers those phones. And again, those are just people. So, you know, be polite, have your conversation, but get your point across quickly, say thank you, and make your point. And then after legislative aide is going to walk over to a whiteboard and put a tick mark next to the issue that they're engaging on, saying yes, oppose, or yes, support. And that's how, you know, they look down this thing. And if they get an email about a thing, it carries X amount of weight. But if you make that phone call or in person have a meeting, it carries that much more leverage. Because if one of us is going to send an email, if a person calls, it carries what we assume is about 10 emails worth of weight. If you're calling and you're willing to do that work, it carries that much more power. So if you can, make the phone calls, have the meeting in person, because it absolutely makes that difference. And we hear it time and time again that, you know, us as hunters and anglers, right? We want to go out in the woods, and we want to sit in the tree stand, and we want to go out on the lake and turn off the world and shut out the buzz. But unfortunately, we have to be part of that system if we want our voice to be heard. So this is the time to do it. And you know, there's not a whole lot of seasons open right now. So get it done now before turkey season and fishing opens up and before the fall, and make your voice heard. And then you can feel good about it going into the rest of the seasons.
And before we close out, like, our public lands, do we continue to grow the amount of public space we have, or is that number shrinking? Do either of you know?
I typically say we're never making more public land. There's always, you know, more urban sprawl or parking lots being built. You know, subdivisions are expanding. It's harder and harder to find those wild places. And so if we've got an opportunity, whether that is a landowner who puts his land into CRP or into easement, and or, you know, here a couple of years ago, a landowner in Lacqua County transferred his land over to become a WMA, or it expanded a currently existing WMA. So it does happen, but it's few and far between. So it's certainly something that we want to celebrate when there's an opportunity to do it, or for the DNR to acquire a chunk of land and make it happen. Like, we, you know, can't scream that from the rooftops loud enough.
Well, good luck with the event at the state capitol. I would be there, but I'm actually going to be on our public waters, showing the Shirk Boys a little bit about the spring trout season. So we'll be off the grid, which I'm looking forward to. I hope you guys have a crowd. And on behalf of a lot of people, I suppose both of you, we need to say thanks. Continue the good fight.
Thank you. Bill, am I able to talk about rendezvous?
Of course. Well, we've got you. Go.
Yeah. I just wanted to invite everybody to the BHA's national convention. Our national gathering is called the North American BHA Rendezvous. And we're celebrating 20 years of BHA this year. This is the first time that this event, this annual get-together, has ever happened outside of the Mountain West.
Right.
With BHA headquartered in Missoula, Montana, it's been in Oregon and Washington and Colorado and Montana, but has always been centered in that West where you had talked about earlier, because there's such large swaths of public land there. But we do have excellent public recreation opportunities to hunt and fish and gather and trap here in Minnesota and around the Midwest and even across into the East. And this was an opportunity for us to talk about, you know, those national forests, those state WMAs, the excellent public land recreation that we have here, and really put it on a pedestal for the nation to see. So we were awarded the opportunity to host that national convention coming here April 18th through the 20th in just a couple of weeks to the Minneapolis Convention Center. So everything from, you know, the standard, you know, vendor seminars put on by, we've got 85 vendors. That's more vendors than we've ever had at the rendezvous. But vendors, vendor expo, skills seminars, advocacy panels, to where you'll learn how to engage with legislators. You're going to be able to talk to representatives from the DNR, from different sportsmen's organizations. We invited a lot of different organizations to kind of come and gather. It's not just our show. It's for all, you know, groups to kind of come and be a part of. So whether you're part of BHA or whether you just like to hunt and fish, please come and join us. Wild game cook-offs, turkey calling competitions, some trivia with the folks from the Meat Eater group. You know, just it's a really fun weekend that hopefully people can walk away fired up to get engaged, get involved, and you know, really make some good relationships. I've met some of my best friends that are in this space at the rendezvous over the last few years, and I can't recommend it highly enough.
How do you manage the whole West versus Midwest debate? Because they all come here from the West and say, oh, it's so flat. Man, this place would be perfect if you only had mountains.
I tell them they're not looking hard enough. I have that kind of feeling when I go out to, you know, Wyoming or Montana, and I drive out, and there's always that first, you know, skyline of the mountains. And I remember the first time I went out west with my, at that time, girlfriend, now wife, I said, okay, take a picture of those mountains and then don't look at that picture until we leave. And as we drove away, she said, man, this picture is terrible. It doesn't do it justice at all. And I think there's some of that to be said about the lakes, because I always drive away from the mountains, but yeah, you know, I could live out here, but I end up in the same place that I always do with that conversation, go, I would miss lakes and trees too much. You know, mountains are great, but I miss my forests.
Well, and we've got what, the Sawtooths, right? Hey, legit mountain range. I'm married on top of one of those mountains. They exist.
I'm looking right now out at the Blufflands, and you know, you'd be pretty hard pressed to make the argument that these weren't at least small mountains.
Yep. Wonderful. Aaron, Lucas, thanks so much for the time. Again, continued success, and have a little bit of fun at the state capitol. And please, please get your message across to the people who are listening.
For sure. And please, yeah, again, Lucas mentioned sportsmen. Please check out backcountryhunters.org too for more information on our organization, whether that's the Minnesota chapter or the national at large. And you can find us there.
Awesome. Thanks, guys.
Thanks so much for having us.
Thank you.
Lucas Leaf and Aaron Habeisen, thanks for the time today. I'm Bill Shirk, the man about the woods. That about wraps up the Minnesota Bound podcast, the stories behind the stories. Again, a big shout out to all our sponsors, Connecticut Water, Lakes Gas, Star Bank, Your Boat Club. Have fun outdoors, and until next week, don't forget to introduce a kid to the great outdoors.